Is a class by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 17th chapter, texts 6 to 7, given on the 23rd of November 2015 in Mayapur, India.
Anka kritya striyam jasti katahri prakrito yata jata daras jiratapa brahmavadi sabapati. We'll start with translation of text 6. Chitraketu said, Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the general populace, is the best of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. He enunciates the system of religion. Yet how wonderful it is that he is embracing his wife, Parvati, in the midst of an assembly of great saintly persons. Text 7. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, has certainly undergone great austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in the assembly of strict followers of Vedic principles. Nonetheless, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and is embracing her as if he were a shameless, ordinary human being. Purport. Chitraketu appreciated the exalted position of Lord Shiva, and therefore he remarked at how wonderful it was that Lord Shiva was acting like an ordinary human being. He appreciated Lord Shiva's position, but when he saw Lord Shiva sitting in the midst of saintly persons and acting like a shameless ordinary man, he was astonished. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that although Chitraketu criticized Lord Shiva, he did not offend Lord Shiva like Daksha. Daksha considered Lord Shiva insignificant, but Chitraketu expressed his wonder at Lord Shiva's being situated in that way. Om Gyanachimadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chokshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudevi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Chitraketu seems to go from one complicated situation to another. Amidst all this, however, you should remember that even when he started out in the mess with his thousands of wives and wanting a son, still he is a very advanced devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You recall how Chitraketu had everything a living entity could want, but he didn't have a son. Therefore, when Angira Rishi showed up, that's what Chitraketu asked for. And Angira Rishi warned him, all right, you'll get a son, but Harsha Shoka, he'll be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. Chitraketu was duly warned, but due to his attachment, you know, attachment makes us do those things, just race through the stop signs, ignore the yellow lights. He wanted a son so badly. He thought that, all right, Angira Rishi's warning about Harsha Shoka means that I'll be so happy to have a son, which is true, but there'll be a little lamentation because he'll be a naughty son, but that's all right. He'll be a son. Reminds me of the way Srila Prabhupada describes Bhishmadev's father, Santanu Maharaj, dealing with Ganga Devi personified. She, in response to his marriage request, laid down her ultimatum. Look, you want to marry me? Here's the deal. Every child born of our union, you must throw into the Ganga. The way Prabhupada describes Santanu Maharaj. Never mind, come on. We'll throw all the children into the Ganga. Come on. This is what material desire does to us. So Chitraketu, he thought, oh, I'll have a son. So what if he's naughty or rebellious? It doesn't matter. You know what transpired. The son was killed. And the whole kingdom was plunged in lamentation. Not simply Chitraketu, his wife, and their staff, but the whole kingdom. The grief just fed upon grief. I don't know if you've ever seen grief like that before. And the Bhagavad Gita describes that grief grew like a blazing fire. Like in Australia, they have these bushfires. In California, also, they have these fires that just go on and on and on. And it's burning thousands upon thousands of acres and sometimes people. And so this is what happened in the kingdom. The queen's grief fed the king's grief. The king's grief fed the whole kingdom's grief. Everyone is drowning in an ocean of lamentation. I don't know if you've ever seen that before. That kind of grief that's contagious, spreads like wildfire. An ocean of lamentation. You can also see the sense of community and sense of connectedness. It's not like the modern attitude of, I live, you die. You had some tough luck, too bad. No. The whole kingdom was drowning. And that's the situation in which Angirishi and Narada Muni entered into. See, Angirishi didn't bring Narada Muni the first time. But even when they came, and Angirishi, it's his second time, and Narada Muni's first time, they were disguised. Makes you wonder, why were they disguised? They came looking like ordinary wandering mendicants. And they began to preach to Chitraketu that you are an advanced devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This lamentation due to material gain and loss is not befitting you. Now, you'll react like, oh, you know, it wasn't an ordinary material loss. He wanted a son so badly, and the son is dead. Why are Narada Muni and Angirishi, disguised as they are, you know, criticizing him for lamenting over material loss? Isn't that natural? Yes, it's natural, but this drowning in the ocean of lamentation was way over the top in terms of the stature of Chitraketu. And that's what you have to bear in mind, the stature of Chitraketu. He wasn't an ordinary fool. He wasn't an ordinary man. There's another reason why Angirishi and Narada Muni both came. They came not simply because of Chitraketu and not simply because of his family. They saw that the whole kingdom, all the people, were just engulfed in this blazing fire of mourning. The whole kingdom was incapacitated and the kingdom was headless. So that was the greater reason why Angirishi came back with Narada Muni. They felt a responsibility to counsel, to mentor, to guide. But Angirishi, as he'll explain later, also noted this is an opportunity for good timing. So after they preached to Chitraketu in their disguises, Chitraketu recognized that these are extraordinary saintly persons, not by his sight, but by hearing. This is the important point. Narada Muni's and Angirishi's disguise emphasize that you see a saintly person through the ears. Just by hearing their message, Chitraketu concluded, "I'm in the Association of Extraordinary Souls." And he commented how great Paramahansas wander the earth disguised for the benefit of us ordinary fools. And then Angiya Rishi and Narada Muni revealed themselves. And Angiya Rishi commented that, you know, I could have given you Param Gana the first time I came. I could have given you the supreme transcendental knowledge the first time I showed up, but you weren't ready. You didn't want to hear it, in other words. Maybe we ourselves have been in such a situation. Please, Guru Maharaj, please, Gurudev, tell me what to do. I'm ready to do anything. But the saintly person knows the motivations. And often he or she can't actually deliver the full merchandise, because even though the subordinate is saying, please, just tell me, please, I'll do anything, but you can see, not really. So this is a delicate job, giving counsel. It's a delicate job being a spiritual mentor, guide, spiritual master. It requires timing, it requires tact, sensitivity, and most of all, it requires help from the Supreme Personality of Godhead how to do such a service. So Angiya Rishi, so to speak, put his cards on the table. Look, I could have, from the very beginning, given you this Param Gana, but you just wanted a son. I warned you. Narada Muni then takes over, and Narada Muni gives the mantra. Narada Muni tells him, you chant this mantra, and in 7 days, you'll see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sankarshan. Obviously, Chitraketu was a Vaikuntha man. So Narada Muni told him about Lord Sankarshan and said, you'll get his darshan in 7 days. So Chitraketu applied the instructions of Narada Muni. And indeed, first came, before Sankarshan, the intermediate goal of material opulence, Vidyadhara Pati. Chitraketu became the lord of the Vidyadharas. Their name literally means bearing knowledge. They're higher planets people. Chitraketu became their master. And then, as he continued on with the mantra chanting, indeed, after 7 days, he saw Lord Sankarshan. He had that darshan. He offered prayers to Lord Sankarshan. Lord Sankarshan spoke to him and then departed. Sometimes devotees ask, well, why? Why didn't Chitraketu, he's having the darshan of Lord Sankarshan, why did he still linger in the material world? But you see in Krishna Leela, you also see in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has things to accomplish to his devotees. And therefore, they may stay in the material world a little longer, just like Manigriva Nalakuvara, after they were liberated from the Yamalarjuna trees, they went back to their status as demigods to finish out that stint. Or sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants that even though these devotees have attained his precious darshan, he wants them to demonstrate something. He wants them to teach other living entities something by their example. So in any case, Chitraketu had it good, we would think, right? He's now Vidyadharapati, the lord of the Vidyadharas, and he's traveling around the universe in an aircraft given by Lord Vishnu. And who is he traveling with? Oh boy, bhakti is good, isn't it? He's traveling with the Vidyadhara women. No earthly woman can compare to their beauty. And the Bhagavatam describes that Chitraketu had inexhaustible bodily strength. For millions of years, he was traveling around like this with the Vidyadhara women. But they were also engaged in Sankirtan. They were, they were glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that's not so much the part that we focus on. Wow, immeasurable bodily strength, millions of years, hordes of the most beautiful women in an aircraft, personally given by Vishnu. This is bhakti. Like sometimes materialist hedonists, when they have some momentary pleasure, they say, life is good, isn't it? Life is good. We know it doesn't last. But sometimes when we read about such situations, we think, well, this is bhakti. This is where it's at. But we're going to find out that the Supreme Personality of Godhead wanted to show another aspect. He had given Chitraketu wealth and bhakti. Okay. But he's also going to give Chitraketu the body of a demon. In that way, the Supreme Personality of God is going to show how prema triumphs in all circumstances and how he's always acting for the welfare of his devotee, no matter what the external circumstances. But our problem is we are attached to those external circumstances. So we're wondering, what's going on here? First he was flying around the universe, enjoying as well as bhakti, and then all of a sudden the rug is ripped out from under him and he's got the body of a demon. Wait a minute, what kind of spiritual development is this? Makes you wonder, yes? I mean, shouldn't it be that if you're engaged in the service of Krishna, all the material circumstances should be nice? And Chitraketu had it nice. So then he's flying around and he passes over a gathering where Lord Shiva sits with Parvati in the assembly of great saints and sages, demigods, rishis. And Lord Shiva is embracing his wife on his lap. So Chitraketu says something. And it's a multifaceted episode that you can look at it from various different angles. The acharyas do that. Chitraketu, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, was not making Lord Shiva out to be an ordinary man. He didn't make Daksha's mistake. He knew this is Lord Shiva. At the same time, he's expressing wonder, like, it's Lord Shiva. We all know his glories. And look at the assembly of the most advanced personalities, enlightened, self-realized. But what's going on in that assembly with such an inconceivable person? He's got his wife on his lap embracing her. A common sight in Kali Yuga, but among civilized people, this is normally considered to be atrocious. So Chitraketu feels impelled to say something. Later we'll find out that what was impelling him was the Supreme Personality of Godhead as a supersoul, and that supersoul was also impelling Parvati to respond the way she did. Still, without taking into account the supersoul, the situation has instruction for us. Chitraketu commented, what is this? And he said it in such a way that everyone in the assembly, including Lord Shiva and including his wife, heard. Now, from Parvati's side, this is what she was thinking. You said it once, you said it twice, you said it thrice, you went on too many times. The acharyas make that point. It wasn't that Chitraketu just kind of mumbled something out the side of his mouth. Evidently, he reiterated his point. And Parvati took offense at that. You've said it too many times. So, she considered that Chitraketu was proud. And yes, the acharyas point out there was something mixed in there. Pride due to having seen Lord Sankarshan. So we have to get accustomed when reading the Bhagavatam to very subtle things. In other words, you might be wondering, well, how, if he was proud, did he get to see Lord Sankarshan? It's not the gross pride that we're so acquainted with in earthly existence. There was some tiny tinge there. But that tiny tinge is enough to make things happen for Chitraketu's benefit and for our benefit. Just like in the Leela of Sudama Vipra and Krishna. You know, Sudama Vipra living in poverty with his wife, and she's urging him, please, go see your friend Krishna in Dwarka. He'll give you something. And Sudama Vipra was, no, 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 I can't approach the Lord for material benefits. And who am I? And I'm so degraded. Why would the Lord want to take notice of me? But his wife kept pushing him. And the Shastra explains that both were right. It wasn't that the wife was being a nag. She was correct. We need a little money for the household. from the Varnashram Dharma point of view, she was right. And Sudama Vipra was also right. Oh, no, I don't go to Dwarka just to ask for material benefit. But his wife, she was clever. She said, all right, you don't have to ask. Just go there, show up. And the Lord will know exactly that you need money. But even if he doesn't say anything, the devotees in the audience, they'll take note and they'll give you something. So, you know the result. How Sudama Vipra left Dwarka thinking he hadn't gotten a penny, and he was rejoicing. Makes you again wonder, what is this bhakti thing? He's rejoicing on the way back home. My Lord is so wonderful, he didn't give me a penny. He knows that if I would just get a tiny bit of wealth, I'd be finished, I'd fall down. How wonderful my Lord is. But then when he gets home, everyone knows what he saw. Opulence rivaling the splendor of Indra. So what was the subtle thing that was going on? The acharyas point out that Krishna noted that certainly Sudama Vipra was not attached at all to material enjoyment, but he was a little too attached to austerity and renunciation. So the Lord is thinking, he's a little bit too caught up in this vairagya. I'll fix him. I'll load him up with opulence equivalent to what Indra has. Of course, we're thinking, yeah. But my point in bringing this up is to show how equipoised is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can handle anything, any variant in his devotee and respond perfectly. And this is what we have to become accustomed to. Not the external circumstances of wealth or poverty, sickness or health, but how the Supreme Personality of Godhead perfectly deals with his devotees. But due to conditioning, we're externalists. We're always looking at the external packaging, the wrapping. Oh, wealth. Oh, poverty. Oh, Chitraketu, flying around in a heavenly spacecraft. Oh, then he becomes a demon. What's going on here? So we need this instruction in the Bhagavatam to make us internalists. What about Queen Kunti's statement? the famous one. Vipita santu shasvat tatra tatra jagadguru. Let these calamities happen again and again. Bring on the danger. We like quoting this verse, but living it? But she's teaching a very profound mystic truth of bhakti. She's teaching that what's important is not danger or lack of danger. What's important is remembering Krishna. We can't fail to hear this again and again. And it is very deep. And it is very high. But this is the direction we all have to march in. She's not a masochist. She's not attached to suffering for suffering's sake. She's not attached to she's not a calamity freak. She's focused 100% on Krishna. And wow, these so-called dangers brought Krishna. So therefore, let's redefine the situation here. It's not danger. It's Krishna. If you read Prabhupada's lecturing on that verse, so profound, stated in such simple language, you might just roar past it. Danger is another feature of Krishna. Why should a real devotee distinguish between these are good times, these are dangerous times? A real devotee, and yes, this is very high, but this is where we all should be going. A real devotee sees Krishna either as a festival or as danger. Why make some kind of polarity? Why live in duality that I only accept the festival times in bhakti? I don't accept the danger times. Prabhupada instructed us in commenting on those, in lecturing on that verse, that don't think just because we're devotees we'll never see danger. But why not learn how to see the danger properly, since danger is going to be there? Now you might say, what do you mean danger is going to be there? Things have been going pretty good for me right now. Yeah. Things have been peaceful. My plans are working out. No. We are in the Bhava Sindhu, the ocean of becoming and unbecoming. Now, what does human civilization call progress? They call progress if they flatten out one wave in the ocean. If they flatten out the next wave, oh, we are so technologically mighty. We are so progressive. We're advancing. But how do you flatten out all the waves in the ocean? The nature of the ocean is to have waves. So how can you measure progress in terms of if you manage to flatten out one wave in the immense Atlantic or Pacific Ocean? But that's what's going on today. So what is real progress? Real progress means to cross over the ocean, not to flatten out a wave or two. You can't stop the waves. Similarly, we cannot stop danger in the material world. So we've got to get that through our heads. The real success of my life is to cross over the ocean of waves, not to battle one wave after the other. I rode over one wave. How great we are. We're doing good. No. Cross. Cross the entire ocean of danger. So Queen Kunti is pointing out real success. Apunar Bhava. No more repetition of birth and death. That is the real progress. And if so-called danger puts me in a situation in which my consciousness is always attached to Krishna, then I don't call it a calamity. I don't call it danger. This is my friend because it's bringing me Krishna. This is yoga at its perfection. This is mystic, the highest mysticism. How to see everything as related directly to Krishna and not favor this circumstance or that circumstance. Why only appreciate Krishna when there's a festival? Why not appreciate Krishna too when there's danger? Then we are complete yogis. We're not religious believers. We are practicing the topmost rung of the yoga ladder. So what we're hearing in the example of Chitraketu or Kunti Devi, this is the highest mysticism. So now Chitraketu is going to be cursed. Parvati is accusing him. You're puffed up. Who do you think you are? Don't you know who's in this audience? Great demigods, great rishis. They don't say anything. Brahma hasn't said anything. All these extraordinary personalities have not commented one word about my being embraced on the lap of my husband. Now, but you have said something. Who do you think you are? But she does it in a motherly mood. She calls him Putra. You're my son, you know, and I'm going to chastise you. Now, we know Lord Shiva didn't take it in this way. Lord Shiva was silent. And picking up on his understanding, the assembly was also silent. Lord Shiva, along with the members of the assembly, were thinking that Chitraketu wants to protect the honor of Lord Shiva. Chitraketu was worried that if common persons would follow this example, we're in trouble. That's how refined and elevated is Vedic culture. Chitraketu was worried that if a common man sees Shiva sitting with his wife on his lap and embracing her, society would become doomed. So he was worried about the common man. And he was also worried about criticism of Lord Shiva. So he was kind of doing Shiva a favor from the way he thought it. But look at that from another point of view. Who is he to instruct, to teach Lord Shiva? But Lord Shiva understood. He thinks he's looking out for me. So I don't take offense. And the members of the assembly also considered in that way. Later, after Parvati curses Chitraketu, Shiva explains to her more that, you know, Chitraketu and I are actually friends. He was kind of, how do you say, poking me in the ribs, so to speak. He was kind of mocking me a bit for sitting with my wife on my lap in public. But who is he? He's traveling around in that spaceship with all those women. But we're just enjoying an exchange of joking words. In other words, who is he to talk? So therefore, I didn't react. You know, we're just enjoying some joking words. The Acharyas explained that Shiva told his wife, look, here's the situation. Chitraketu makes a big display of bhakti while hiding his material enjoyment. I make a big display of material enjoyment while hiding my bhakti. Some of these things are going on. It's kind of complex, isn't it? So now, Chitraketu has been cursed to be a demon. And you'll hear how he descends from his spacecraft, offers his obeisances to Parvati, and refuses to try to get out of the curse in any kind of way. He takes it as a benediction. He takes it as a chance to increase his bhakti. It seems like such a horrible outcome to us. He's going to be born as a hideous demon, Vritrasura. Why would the Supreme Personality of Godhead let something like that happen to such an advanced devotee? If we are attached to the material circumstances, we'll miss the whole point. And reading this whole history really shakes your material attachments. It shakes your conceptions. It's like, wait a minute. Doesn't the external have any value? Aren't we supposed to have some good times in bhakti? I mean, doesn't Krishna want us to enjoy? It makes us really question where we're at. The same as when we hear about Kunti Devi saying, Apuna Bhavadarshanam, let calamities come because I see calamities as my friend. I'm thinking of Krishna. Anything that makes me think of Krishna more, I welcome. Wow. what level is this? Anything that makes you think of Krishna more is welcome? I mean, who wants distress? Who wants bad times? But now we're seeing how indeed bhakti is transcendental. And that is such a lesson for all of us to learn, to assimilate, and strive to act on. Because you can't take the waves out of the ocean. You can't make a problem-free material world. You can't make it so there's no danger. So the question is, what impels us to cross the ocean? That is success. What impels us to think of Krishna more, to cling to Krishna more? That is success. So these sections of the Bhagavatam force us to reconfigure our conceptions of progress, success, and advancement. And those coming from Western so-called civilization especially need to take this on board, because we have been programmed since time immemorial with such a false, illusory conception of progress, fulfillment, advancement, and success. By studying this section of the Bhagavatam, those conceptions will be annihilated. We'll be forced to totally reevaluate our way of thinking, reconfigure our thinking, and go to a higher level. Finally, what was Krishna thinking? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in all his expansions and forms. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is thinking, I miss Chitraketu. I'm feeling separation from him. I want him back in Vaikuntha. So, what is our response? Hey, just because you're feeling separated, hey, wait a minute. This is a bit much. Thank you, Lord, you're feeling separation, but you put your devotee in the body of a demon. Now, let's be a bit, you know, analytical about this. Let's be calm and think about this here. We don't say these things out loud, but we're wondering, wait a minute. Just because God is feeling separation from his devotee, he puts his devotee in the body of a demon? Again, we're forced to reevaluate what is real wealth. What is the use of the material world, in other words? That's what we're confronting. What's the use of the material world if... Because the Lord wants me to go back to Godhead quickly, he puts me in material calamity. Wait a minute. That means material world's not very important. It means the waves in the ocean of Bhava Sindhu are not very important. The important thing is to go back to Godhead. Yeah, we say that, but, I mean, really, we want nice circumstances. And then after a long life of nice circumstances, then we die in our sleep and go back to Godhead. So let's look at why the Supreme Lord did what he did. The Acharyas explain that reason number one, the Lord wants to clearly demonstrate that his devotee is transcendental to happiness, distress, to lower planets, higher planets, even transcendental to liberation. Sarga pavaga navakesha tulyata darshanam. Lord Shiva will testify to the glories of Chitraketu. He's a devotee. That means whether heaven or hell, liberation, he doesn't care as long as he has a chance to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Lord wanted to demonstrate, this is bhakti, this is where my devotee is really at. Don't you see it? We don't see it, therefore we need help. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, we needed the help of Arjuna to demonstrate what it's like to be in Maya. So Chitraketu will demonstrate. He can take the body of a demon and be even more Krishna conscious. So that was reason number one. Swarga pavarga narakesh apidu tuyata darshanam, to show the devotee is equal to all circumstances and is simply attached to Narayana Prayana, attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second reason is the Supreme Personality of Godhead thinking Chitraketu has done his stint long enough enjoying with the Vijayadaras. Enough is enough. Enough with the heavenly spaceship and the Vijayadara women. It's time to close the curtains on that chapter. What are we thinking? No, no, don't close the curtains on that. This is what's his reward for bhakti. Don't close the curtains. And the curtains close in such a dramatic way. Take birth as a demon. And be killed. The third reason is hunger for prema. The Lord wanted to increase the prema agni, the fire of love for him. And indeed, in the spiritual world, in the dealings of Krishna and his devotees, you see the truth of the statement, love justifies anything, even casting a devotee into a body of a demon, all because of love. So that should make you think, what kind of love is this that the Supreme Lord is offering? A love so inconceivable that he can put his devotee in the body of a demon, and that's all for the betterment of love, for the increase of love. What is this love? What is this prema? That's what we should be wondering. To increase Chitraketu's hankering, his hunger for prema, he was put into the body of Vritrasura. And the fourth reason was the Lord was actually wanting, you come to Vaikuntha, engage in direct service to me, massage my feet. So for all the above, this drama is unfolding. And the unfolding of this drama makes us understand that the love supreme, the loving feelings of the Supreme Personality of God and his devotee, they are beyond any material circumstance. Real progress means, number one, cross the ocean of dangers. Don't try to flatten out the waves. And number two, to increase the appetite, the hunger for love of Krishna. In this way, we can learn so much from Chitraketu's multi-episode drama. Even Parvati learned something. Lord Shiva tells her, I think the beauty of his bhakti is more beautiful than you. She covered her face with her sari. She knew she had been defeated. So you might say, okay, she's been defeated, but what's happening with Chitraketu? Let's look at those external circumstances. Let's get real here. We live in the real world, and he has just been put into the body of a demon. I mean, all glories to, love of Krishna, right? But let's look at what's actually happening here on the ground, you know? No. Our brains are becoming reconfigured. Our intelligence is becoming reworked, and we're appreciating that we can never get rid of danger in this world. And we need to increase our bhakti so that we can aspire, at least aspire, to thinking as Kunti Devi, as Chitraketu thought. That the real success is increasing the thinking of Krishna, the love for Krishna. In that case, if a calamity does it, the calamity is my friend. This is the direction we all need to go in. That is what the depth of Krishna bhakti offers us.